Connie Kaplan, and welcome to the Invisible Garment Podcast, where we talk about spiritual principles, knitting, and the politics of ethical behavior. Episode 4, brought to you by the spiritual principle called memory. Today we'll discuss my favorite topic, gems and stones. We'll discuss knitting lace and how that applies to life. We'll talk about an ugly American mirror. And we're going to talk about being now. Spiritual principle of memory. Now, here is another example of the English language just not measuring up. There are so many words. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of words in the English language. And then there are all of these words like memory that get used in lots of different ways with lots of different meanings. Most of us talk about memory as if we were talking about some sort of cognitive process. But as a spiritual principle, the word memory is about the imprint of the essential patterns that determine survival and life, the recreation of life itself. Life has a way of recording what has been successful so that the wheel doesn't have to be reinvented every time a flower wants to open its bloom. Sperms and eggs know what to do. Birds and bees know what to do. Acorns know how to become oak trees. And coal knows how to make a diamond. It's just there. It's imprinted. That's the kind of memory we're talking about when we speak of the spiritual principle of memory. So if you have memory in your invisible garment, there's a just knowing what to do factor within you that's a little bit more amplified in you than in other people. But it doesn't mean that you have a good, quote, memory. You know, I've spoken in other podcasts about how each of these principles has an interior anchor point, something that's inside the body where it's anchored, and an exterior anchor point. Well, minerals and gems and rocks and stones are the external anchor point of the principle of memory. They are the skeletal system of our Mother Earth, and they store her memory. I'm sure you know just enough about geology to know what I'm talking about. Internally, it's our bones. It's our human skeletal system, or the animal skeletal system, or the skeletal system of any creature that stores the memory of who we have been and where we have been. Crystals and gems are most interesting because the atoms of these stones line up in such a divinely mathematical, perfect order that they actually allow for the refraction of light. So that's why we can see through them. That's why they have color. That's why they are so valuable to us, because their beauty is really fundamentally focused on how their atoms are all lined up and how they store memory. And I'm sure if you've ever been to a crystal shop and met a real crystal collector person, they'll tell you about the memory keepers and about how crystals store memory. And on the other side of that spectrum, if you are a geek, you know that silicon is the, you know, primary source of computer chips because of their ability to store memory. Other stones, on the other hand, and other solid forms, their atoms line up in sort of more random ways, in tighter ways, in less open ways that do not allow for the refraction of light, and therefore you can't see through them. So stones become a very interesting part of your life if you have memory in your contract. Most people that I've known who have memory in their invisible garment are just naturally attracted to stones. I want to tell you a little story about memory that's just so precious to me. I was in the kitchen one day looking for a recipe. I remember the book that I was looking through. I was sitting on a very high stool And my 3-year-old son came running in, and he looked up at me, and he came running over and threw his arms around my knees and kind of buried his face in my knees and my lap. And he said, "You're the best mom I've ever had." And I kind of laughed and said, "Well, thank you. I think I'm the only mom you've ever had." And he said, "Oh, no, I've had lots of moms, but I've just never had one like you." Well, I was a little bit nonplussed by that. And I just kind of said, "Well, you know, you're the best son I've ever had too," and let it go. But a few days later, I actually couldn't let it go. So I brought it back up again. I said, "Do you remember the other day when you told me I was the best mom you'd ever had?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, tell me about some of your other moms." And he said, "Oh, some of them are mean and, you know, fat, sometimes ugly and like really sad. I've just never had a mom like you before." Well, I didn't press it any further than that. I just kind of thought, wow, whatever that is that past life memory, you know, a 3-year-old maybe is still close enough to the other side that they remember something. Or is that imagination? What is that? I don't know. It's 20 years later. I can't seem to get him to remember even that conversation, much less any of his other mothers right now. But that moment just will always resonate with me as such a magical moment. There's something about knowing it in your bones. Oh, I didn't say that, did I? He told me that. He said, I just feel it in my bones. You're the best mom I ever had. He did use those words. So anyway, I just wanted to share that sweet memory with you. And now I want to share another one with you. This was in the early 80s, and my husband and I had gone to Esalen for a little vacation, and I was taking a course with Michael Harner on shamanic healing. Now, for several months prior to going to Esalen, I had been experiencing pain in the upper part of my back, and it was in a very specific spot. I could actually, you know, put my finger right on the spot where it hurt. And I had been to massage therapy, and I had been to yoga, and I had done all kinds of stretching and twisting and whatever to try to relieve this kind of stabbing pain that I was experiencing right there in my back. But it wouldn't go away. So one of the very first exercises that Michael Harner did with us was a rock exercise. He said, you know, rocks can talk to you. Rocks can answer your questions. And he went around the room and he gave each of us a rock. The rock was about, I don't know, cantaloupe or grapefruit size. And it was just a big old, you know, river rock. And he said, "Look at this rock. Ask this rock a question and keep looking at it until you get the answer." So I decided, okay, I'm going to ask this rock what I need to do to get rid of this pain in my back. So I did. And I sat there. And I looked at it, and you know how rocks have like little cracks and whatever in them. And I swear, just like a kid's magic 8-ball toy, a picture just kind of rose up out of those lines. And what I could see was a Middle Eastern looking woman who had a veil. She had on long, flowing clothes. She looked like from an ancient time, although I'm sure the people in Afghanistan still dress that way. I saw also a robed Middle Eastern man standing behind her, and he had a knife in his hand, and she was down on her knees, and he was stabbing her right in that spot where my back hurt. Well, I watched it a little longer, and I zoomed in, and she had my face. And he had the face of someone that I knew in this lifetime, someone who was actually in my life and being sort of annoying. I didn't exactly know what to think. Is this a past life memory? Is this, what is this? I don't know. But there was a sense that I had been stabbed in the back by this man, and that's why my back was hurting as I was in relationship with him. I didn't exactly know what to do with this information, but I decided there's something about this story that I need to integrate. It's as if he took my life in another lifetime and now he owes me one. And I need to learn how to receive from this person rather than just, you know, being offended by him. So I kind of set about in my mind rewriting the story between me and this man. And by the time I went home at the end of that week, that back pain was gone, and it had been there constantly for several months prior to this event. I don't know what that was. I'm not saying that a rock can show me a picture of a past life or of another dimension. I'm not saying that I even saw what I saw. You know, I'm. It's possible that my imagination or that something else was speaking to me at that time. I'm just saying. Now we're going to talk about knitting, one of my favorite segments of podcasting. We're going to talk about knitting as a metaphor for memory. Because, you know, yarn has memory. Yarn has an intelligence. It has a sense of itself. And so it's interesting to work with yarn. I think I've mentioned before that there are times when I'm sitting there knitting and it's almost like I transport into another time and space. I connect with the incredibly long lineage that knitting must have. I mean, knitting must have been a way of making clothes from the very beginning of primates deciding to clothe themselves. So I feel this connection sometimes with this long knitting lineage. But I also want to talk about the fact that yarn has memory. That when you wrap yarn around itself and you tie those little knots and you create those little designs, it memorizes itself. Now, I don't know if you've ever taken the time or had the patience to knit a lace garment, whether it's a garment or a shawl or a collar or a scarf. Knitting lace requires a great deal of attention because you have to use the math. You have to count those stitches. You have to pay attention to those yarn overs and those knit twos together and those slip knits. And you have to place markers and you have to make sure the markers don't slip around the yarn overs. And it's a complicated little thing to do. But you do it because you love it. And you do it because you know that what you're going to end up with is going to be just so magnificent and so beautiful. But the first time you do it, there is this horrible moment. You're finally done with the garment. You bind off, you then wash it, whether you wash it by hand or whether you wash it in a gentle vibrating machine, you wash it and then you pull it out because you're ready to stretch it out and block it. And after you wash it and you pull it out, you have what looks like the cat that got into your yarn. It's just a big ball of mess. And depending on how fine your lace yarn was, it looks like somebody pulled all of the dental floss out of the whole, you know, little package and wadded it all up and handed it to you. And you just think, oh my God, I just spent all of those hours and this is screwed up and this is horrible. But you remember that wiser knitters have told you, spread it out on a drying board or on a bed or, you know, on a blocking board and use the pins and pin it all out so that it's in exactly the right shape, and then walk away and let it dry. And so little by little, you do start stretching it out and pinning it, and then you can see the lace pattern again, and you get it all stretched out, and you're thinking, okay, the lace pattern is there. I feel a little better. You walk away, you let it dry, really, 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 really dry, and then it holds its form. And this beautiful, beautiful pattern that's not unlike a crystal because it's so light and filmy and airy that it allows light to come through. It allows for the refraction of light. And here you have this unbelievable garment that you just love and you love to wear because people say, oh, did you make that? And you go, yes. But you never, ever, ever, ever intend to wash it again because you do not want to see the ball of twine all screwed up again. But like me, you spill something on it the first time you wear it. You know, it's white and you spill coffee on it. You have to wash it. You wash it. You pull it out. It's not just perfect, but all it takes this time is a little bit of laying out on the bed and it remembers its form. Yarn has memory. It remembers its form. You never have to block that garment again. It's an amazing thing. It has memory. Now, what you can do if you decide you hate it is you can unravel that particular garment and put it back in the washing machine and wash it again and lay it all out and let it dry. You need to tie it because it will become like just a total mess if you don't. But you can learn how to tie it correctly so that you can wash it, lay it out, let it dry, re-knit it, and it will remember its new form. That's what memory does in your body. It's like, you know, when you cut yourself and then you have a scar, and for the rest of your life, those cells continue to recreate as scar tissue because they are imprinted with a memory. So blocking lace becomes a really interesting sort of metaphor for how you use memory. If you have a beautiful pattern and you lay it out and you block it, a mental pattern, a psychological pattern, an emotional pattern, whatever it is, you lay it out and you block it and you appreciate it, that's really great. It's going to remember itself. The other side of that story is if you have a mental pattern that needs to be unraveled and recreated, you can also do that. Now, this section is the section I call the politics of ethical behavior. What do I mean by that? I think I've spoken about it before. I'm talking about the fact that as you make your ethical decisions, you are influenced by some of these spiritual principles, one in particular. You have one spiritual principle that generally influences your ethical behavior. If that spiritual principle is memory, then you have to pay pretty special attention to the development of your own personal ethic. Now, I've been speaking of memory as it exists in nature, in the stones and in the bones, in the evolution of life. And I've then been speaking of it in the way that it exists in a form that you create, specifically with knitting. But now, I want to talk about how it exists in our psyches. Because memory can become like a big, huge boulder in the middle of the stream that requires that the water cycle around it rather than move through it. Memory can block our ability to flow if we let it reside unconsciously in the middle of our stream. Memory is subconscious. Life is subconscious. I remember when I was pregnant, I used to read these books about, you know, here's what's happening on this day of your pregnancy. And I got to fingers and toes day and I was like, oh my God, I have no idea how to create fingers and toes. And then I realized, you know, that's not really my job. It's there. The memory's there. Well, it's like that. Memory is in our subconscious. To the extent that we're aware of it, however, we can prevent it from becoming a detriment. We can prevent it from being that big rock in the middle of our stream. Other countries have their own cross to bear, but we as a nation have a national psyche, memory that's embedded into our national psyche that is just not very pretty. If we're completely honest with ourselves, we have to realize that we are a country that was built, that was created, that was invented by religious fanatics and slaveholders. This is not a pretty history. These are not memories that we like to hold on to. And so we kind of stuff them in our national psychic closet. Right now, the United States is in a memory crisis. These invisible, subconscious, unconscious, unattractive aspects of our cultural personality are surfacing, and we're having to look at the ugliest American mirror possible. If you've ever been in therapy, you can compare it. It's like the roughest days of therapy when you realize about all the pain that you have been stuffing in various psychic closets, and it starts coming out, and it's ugly, and it's painful, and it hurts, and it's hideous. Well, all kinds of national hideosity is showing up right now in these so-called town hall meetings and in our media and in our national conversation. We are pretending that this national conversation is about the reform of our healthcare system. But it is actually ugly old-fashioned racism and religious fanaticism leaping out of our closets again. I'm hopeful that this time the outcome will be different. I'm hopeful that this time, rather than shoving it back into the closet, we will open our arms to it and become more inclusive of it and really take a deep look at our national psyche. We'll see. Jury's still out on that one. Memory is invisible. The light does not shine through memory. Unlike a crystal, our imprinted genetic and DNA patterns are mysteriously unknown and unseeable to us. Scientists say that 90% of our DNA is called junk DNA, and that's just because they don't know what it does. I'm suggesting it stores junk memory, and that it is time for us to investigate what those memories are and how they are affecting our ethics. It is time to move the big rock out of the river so that the soothing waters can flow unimpaired into our lives and into the lives of our brothers and sisters again. I want to thank everyone who has written me emails and sent me feedback. You know, I really crave this feedback. I love for you to ask me questions. I love for acknowledgement from you.
Many titles.
I love suggestions
daughter,
from you.
Sister,
I would love to have
wife,
news stories
mother,
from you that relate
singer,
to these principles.
Dreamer,
I would love to have
author,
testimonials from
poet,
you. I would love to have sculptor, music from you.
Advisor,
you know,
mentor,
you are my payment. You are my exchange of energy.
Of her many
to the extent that I hear from you,
perhaps
and that you're listening and that you like these,
Los Angeles, California,
I'm going to keep
out
doing
as the most dominant.
Thanks, as always,
she
to Kevin Brennan for the music.
Of her poems, these few.
To learn more about Kevin and teaching, his wife Robin and their amazing company, go to their website, fboo.com. F as in Frank, boo as in boo boo. And be sure and go to Turtle Dreamers to read more about the spiritual principle of memory. There'll be a link to our memory newsletter in the notes on this podcast. But also, when you go to Turtle Dreamers, check out our free dream space and hook up with your dream sisters and brothers from around the world.
Sonnet
for the
maturation.
Ending to this episode, I want to talk a little bit about the memory problems that we're having in this world. People are constantly coming up to me and saying, I can't remember anything anymore. I'm having the hardest time remembering nouns. You know, I'm in the middle of a sentence and I'm trying to name something and I can't remember its name. I have a little bit of a theory about this. In the Innocence podcast, I talked about the development and the evolution of the new heart mind. And I honestly believe that remembering, recreating what happened before, readdressing or renaming things that have been named before are less important to the heart mind than they are to the head mind. And so while we're in this evolutionary shift, the heart is remembering energy and frequency and feeling. The head is having trouble remembering nouns. Now, that's not to say that history is not important. It is. We must remember our history in order to try to correct some of the errors that we made there. But history is not important in a carved in stone way. Now, I'm not recommending the rewriting of history the way many politicians do, because that is dishonest and manipulative and deceitful and hateful and disrespectful and mean and revisionist and vulgar. Am I clear how I feel about that? In fact, it's just old-fashioned lying. It's not really anything about memory at all. But I am talking about the way that we remember our own history and the way that we remember, rewrite what we remember about our own culture. In Innocence, I referred to the heart brain and its evolution, and that evolutionary process is the loss of the old connect the dot patterns in exchange for presence. And I'm not talking about birthday presents or Christmas presents. I'm talking about presence, presence, being present to what is. Because if you're present in the now, when the now becomes the then, it will be an energy that was full of your presence. In other words, it will be truthful and it will be heartfelt and it will not be something that needs to be stuck in a closet. If you're fully present now, then is free to be what it was. Surely we know that our constant recreating of then is what causes most of our problems in the world. So I'm closing today with a suggestion that the best way to address the principle of memory is to be present now. Be here now, as Ram Dass would say. And so listen to Jenna Rose singing now from her album Spirit. Until next time, sweet dreams.